One division of the Yogacara school posits two additions to this typology, making it eightfold. The exponents of this view argue that even mental perception is too transient and contingent to account for the profound unity we observe both in our subjective experience and in our sense of selfhood. They posit that, underlying all these fluctuating, contingent mental states, there must exist a basic mind that retains its integrity and continuum throughout the lifetime of an individual. This, they argue, is best understood as foundational consciousness, the basis of all mental phenomena. Inseparable from this foundational consciousness is the instinctual thought, I am, a thought which Yogacara sees as a distinct stream of consciousness. The Middle Way school, which is the school whose standpoint is generally recognized by Tibetan thinkers, including myself, to represent the apex of Buddhist philosophical thinking, rejects this typology and contends that the entire spectrum of consciousness is adequately encompassed within the sixfold typology. In particular, the Middle Way school is uncomfortable with the potentially essentialist implications of foundational consciousness as postulated in the eightfold system. The question is, what defines this diversity of phenomena as belonging to one family of experience, which we call mental? I remember most vividly in my first lesson on epistemology as a child when I had to memorize the dictum, the definition of the mental is that which is luminous and knowing. Drawing on earlier Indian sources, Tibetan thinkers defined consciousness. It was years later that I realized just how complicated is the philosophical problem hidden behind this simple formulation. Today, when I see 9-year-old monks confidently citing this definition of consciousness on the debating floor, which is such a central part of Tibetan monastic education, I smile. These two features, luminosity or clarity, and knowing or cognizance, have come to characterize the mental in Indo-Tibetan Buddhist thought. Clarity here refers to the ability of mental states to reveal or reflect. Knowing, by contrast, refers to mental states' faculty to perceive or apprehend what appears. All phenomena possessed of these qualities count as mental. These features are difficult to conceptualize, but then we are dealing with phenomena that are subjective and internal, rather than material objects that may be measured in spatio-temporal terms. Perhaps it is because of these difficulties, the limits of language in dealing with the subjective, that many of the early Buddhist texts explain the nature of consciousness in terms of metaphors, such as light or a flowing river. As the primary feature of light is to illuminate, so consciousness is said to illuminate its objects. Just as in light there is no categorical distinction between the illumination and that which illuminates, so in consciousness there is no real difference between the process of knowing or cognition and that which knows or cognizes. In consciousness, as in light, there is a quality of illumination. In talking about mental phenomena, which, according to Buddhist understanding, have the two defining characteristics of luminosity and knowing, there is a danger that one might assume Buddhism is proposing a version of Cartesian duality, namely, that there are two independent substances, one called matter, the other called mind. To allay any possible confusion, I feel a little digression on the basic classification of reality proposed in Buddhist philosophy is necessary. Buddhism suggests that there are three fundamentally distinct aspects or features of the world of conditioned things, the world we live in. 1. Matter, physical objects. 2. Mind, subjective experiences. 3. Abstract composites, mental formations. As to what constitutes the world of matter, there's not much difference between Buddhist thought and modern science. Again, in defining the key characteristics of material phenomena, there would seem to be broad consensus between the two investigative traditions. We see properties such as extension, spatiotemporal locality, and so on, as defining features of the material world.